Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. Look like
I'm
I'm
probably way too low.
No, maybe not.
Well, you're not talking. That's not a John Manuel voice.
I'm turning myself down anyway. That looks good enough to me.
Yeah, I'm going to turn mine down just a touch because I seem to be already at J.J. Cooper voice.
You are. That's okay, though. Okay, well, we'll go ahead with this podcast in 3, 2, 1. Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast along with J.J. Cooper. I'm John Manuel. So glad you're joining us again. Whether you're doing it at BaseballAmerica.com or via iTunes, I really appreciate the download. Remember, you can check us out on our Twitter feed. You can just follow us at Twitter.com/BaseballAmerica. And if you have questions for us to use here on the podcast, send those into us. podcast@baseballamerica.com is the email. We'll get to some of those later in the show, at least two. And, J.J., we took a little podcast hiatus here after the draft, after the College Series, all that kind of good stuff.
Went a whole lot of people in the office for a week there.
That was a big problem, and we had a little we had some travel issues out with the Futures game. With a four-hour rain delay, we weren't able to squeeze in a podcast. That's what happens when one of us is in the dugout and one of us is behind the behind home plate in the stands with the scouts like Ben was, and one of us is up in the press box like Jim Callis was. But a fun Futures game, a AAA All-Star game trip for me, some vacation time. So we appreciate everyone being patient. But we've had a lot go on here on the magazine still in the last couple of weeks as we kind of get into these dog days of summer. So we could talk a little bit about our midseason update, our top 25 prospect midseason update. We'll go over that a little bit. We can still talk a little Futures game. And, again, if you have questions about any of that stuff, you email those into us for next week's show. And pretty much from here on in, a weekly podcast the rest of the summer, and we'll be focusing on the minor leagues, on prospects.
Right. We'll work a little major league when we get to September, October. But, yeah, it's going to be a very prospect-heavy, a very minor league. This is the time of year where we really – not that we don't focus on prospects year-round because we're Baseball America, this is what we do, but – the decks have largely been cleared. The draft's over. I mean, we'll have, you know, signing deadline craziness coming up, you know, next month, or really 3 weeks away now.
Yeah.
And we'll have, you know, 3-4 weeks away. And then we'll have, you know, but college baseball's done. We'll have summer all-star, you know, summer top tens to
do
that.
There are a couple different podcasts I can think of that would not be just on the minors, but it would be the summer college all-star.
But we're working on best tools right now to kind of give you a little preview of what's coming up. Not long after best tools, it turns around, you're doing league top 20s. Not long after league top 20s, you start working on
top
10s, you know, which turn into top 30s for the prospect handbook. So the second half of the year is what we call prospect season at Baseball America. We're in prospect season.
The deadline for the prospect handbook is 4 months away.
That's scary to think.
It's mind-blowing a little bit. That is scary. But we do have a decent body of work for these players this year, and now we have a little finishing kick to watch. But it was a good time, I think, to do a midseason update, J.J., where you can rank. There are a lot of guys graduated the major leagues. I do think I like the fact, I was thinking about this morning, I'm feeling pretty good about us having ranked Tommy Hansen so high.
Yeah, Tommy Hansen, number 3, looks pretty good right now.
It does look pretty good.
I mean, I think if you're looking in the NL, you know, there wasn't, when he came up, the thing going for him was there wasn't anyone who'd really kind of run away with Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And with that being the case, he may still end up working into that.
Especially if the Braves make a run. I don't think the Braves are necessarily equipped to make a run.
I don't think so either.
I think they have a chance only because the Phillies are bad on the mound. The Phillies are a very good team, but on the mound, the Phillies are pretty thin. And I do think the other reason the Braves have a chance is Tommy Hansen, has given them an injection of some energy and he's just given them an ace pitcher that they really haven't had. And plus, they still might get Tim Hudson back. He pitched well the other day at Myrtle Beach, and if he comes back and helps them in the big leagues, well, they'll have the best pitching in the division.
Right, but the interesting discussion now for the Phillies is that there was a lot of talk, you know, okay, hey, they're the team out there that makes the most sense for a Halladay trade because they have enough pieces to make this trade, and they really have enough pieces to make this trade without really hurting their current makeup of their team.
Right, their major league team will remain pretty much intact.
But they're, you know, like yesterday, I think at least, there were 9 games up in the loss column in the East. That being said, it's almost like, well,
I know there were 6.5 up. I said the same thing on a radio show yesterday. I don't see why the Phillies need to trade for Roy Halladay. I think it would help. They'd have a better chance of going to the World Series and winning the World Series again. I think their chances of making the playoffs are already quite good. And really, in the National League, the Dodgers are better.
Right. The Dodgers are a team that...
Yeah.
I mean, but in the East, like, if you're talking about, I don't see how Halladay is necessarily needed to make the playoffs.
Correct.
Now, if you want to win it, you can make the argument that really you may need Halladay. But you look in the East,
yeah,
and that's a lot of easy wins.
Yeah, the Marlins, as one scout put it to me the other day, the Marlins will strike out if you let them. You know, it's not that hard. They're on pace for 1,200 strikeouts.
The Nationals are churning towards Bryce Harper.
The Nationals are 40 games under 500. I watched their game last night against the Mets. And, JJ, I'm going to tell you, that was a brutal display of Major League Baseball because the Mets
The Mets are fielding a Triple-A team now.
Those teams combined for two hits after the third inning. After the fourth inning, I should say. The Mets scored five runs in the first two innings. They got one hit the rest of the game. It was a solo homer by Frenchie in the ninth. Or Logan Kensing. Let's put it this way. Tyler Clippard threw three perfect innings and struck out five, and he was the focus of the post-game show for the Nats. That's all that Ray Knight and Rob Dibble could talk about that was positive. I mean, I got to be honest with you. We're going off on a tangent here. This made me really think of Yankees fans last night. Tyler Clippard, remember the invective spewed at you and later me when you didn't
that
have
was,
Tyler
that
Clippard
was, that
in the top 20?
The Florida State League top 20 that year forever will be known
about
as the Tyler,
or whatever year
the Tyler Clippard chat.
I'm trying to think of in the interactive era of Baseball America, in the chat era, the players that have gotten the most, like where we've disagreed the most with readers that I can think of. From my experience, Tyler Clippard was one. Tim Battle was one. The Yankees fans could not handle that Tim Battle, who just got released earlier this year, that Tim Battle wasn't a prospect.
Oh, really?
Has there been a player similar to Tyler Clippard?
Not my personal experience, because
yeah.
That was the I ended up having a chat that basically revolved around, well, you know, did Tyler Clippard, you know, why is Tyler Clippard not in your top 20? Well, you know, he was in that 20 to 25, but he wasn't number 21. You know, it came down to Carlos Villanueva was the guy who didn't make it. He's
right.
Not exactly, you know, he's a big leaguer, but not a blow you away. But he's
right.
Been a solid reliever. I mean,
he's been solid. I think I left him out of my top 30 that year for the Brewers. He was number 31, and I wish I'd inserted him in there.
But, you know, but he was there was definitely, I mean, there was a lot of debate, like, because of his strikeout rate. And the thing I'll say is that strikeout rate in the low minors, when you're talking about Class A, in my personal opinion, not that it's not important, but you have to then take that strikeout rate and go, okay, why is
How
he getting strikeouts?
Correct.
Now, you reach
it's
a level.
It's not that simple, right.
Right. I mean, Yusmeiro Petit was a guy who, you know, and Yusmeiro Petit was a guy who you couldn't help but write it. Like, I did the Mets one year when Yusmeiro Petit was, you know, with the Mets, and it's like, you couldn't help but write it as, look, he is striking out an insane number of batters in A-ball.
Yeah.
However, there's nothing about him. There's no pitch that you say that's a 70 he's getting strikeouts with. There's a lot of deception there.
I don't even think he had a 60 pitch, did he?
You know, I don't think, no. And so the debate becomes, well, is that going to hold up when he gets to the high, you know, the high minors?
Petit's actually another player that there's been as much disparate views of him as there has been anybody.
Generally, those guys hit the high minors and start to slip because, you know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, the swings and misses you're getting in A-ball don't happen in the higher, you know, in AA, AAA, especially, you know. And so what happens is that, well, then you have to have something to fall back on. Well, if you're getting it with deception, a lot of times there isn't that pitch, you know.
Or if everything's a breaking ball. I mean,
right.
In the low minors, a guy who I guess we missed on, but was like, that was Sean Gallagher, I always remember, was a guy that, you know, in the Midwest League put up dominant numbers. And one of the reasons was he threw a lot of breaking balls, and had a breaking ball that you could use as a chase pitch. And that's a big reason why I think we've talked about this a lot. The higher up the ladder you go, the more stats matter. But like you just said, like in the low minors, in low Class A especially, the stats matter, but they don't tell everything. And they don't even you have to find out how that player produced those stats,
and
not just what stats did they produce.
And with Clippard, the scouting reports were fourth, fifth starter at best. Stuff's not that special, but he really knows how to pitch backwards, and that's really – he's ahead of the hitters at this level.
Right.
And that seems to be, at this point, a pretty accurate scouting report.
Yeah, and he topped out at 92 last night in this big league game, and I was out of the bullpen, and he was letting it all hang out, and he has deception in the delivery, all those
now,
things.
Now, to bring it into kind of back to our midseason top 25,
good.
To give you an example of a guy who's really hard to put a handle on, who did not make the top 25, did not make the next 25, and realistically probably will not make the next 25 after that, and, you know, I mean, or the probably the top 100 when the season's over. Travis Wood at Double A,
yeah,
has a 1.21 ERA this year.
That's amazing.
He's having as good a year if he keeps this up. I looked this up, and if he keeps this up, he's having one of the best years ERA wise of the, you know, of the decade at least. I mean, well, really,
a John Connolly kind of year.
But the difference being that
he's doing
it at Double A.
Absolutely.
And the thing about it is that, you know what, when you do that at Double A, there's got to be a part of you going, okay, is this different? Because
and he's left-handed. To me,
you don't fool.
And,
you know, you don't fool guys at Double A the same way you do. You know, he's not. He's at the right age for Double A. He's a 22-year-old who's doing it Double A. Now that being said, you look at the stuff. You look at the frame because Travis Wood is not a big guy, and the stuff says, okay, what we were talking about with Tyler Clippard. Not, he's a lefty, so maybe you say number three, number four, number five starter.
Right.
But the fastball is a high 80s, low 90s fastball. He's got a now. He does have the thing. He does have is he does have a plus to plus plus pitch, and then he has a changeup.
Right.
That's one of the best in the minors. And now he's added a cutter this year, where he starts to become into discussion. But if you know, if you went. Not that stats aren't important, because they are,
sure.
But if you went just on stats, there's no way Travis Wood's not a top 25 prospect.
Agreed.
When you throw in age appropriateness, what he's doing at Double A, that being said, there's a reason he's not in our top 25. I mean, really, it was his ex-teammate Zach Stewart, who was a guy who was in the discussion for that,
right?
Not Travis Wood.
A guy who's really jumped up, I think, as much as anybody in the minors this year, especially as far as a guy who... a guy who, from last year's draft, who's really made himself, I think, from a good prospect to a really interesting guy. We both had really good scouting reports on him this year.
Yeah, I do think that Zach Stewart, when your season's over, I mean, he's going to be a top 100 guy.
I think the bottom line is, and we talked about with Clipper, we talked about with Wood, and we'll talk about with our top 25. And I mean, I know I harp on this, but it's so much of it is about the fastball. Travis Wood, it's hard to imagine Travis Wood sitting 87, 88, maybe touching higher, but sitting 87, 88, being an impact guy in the major leagues. You have to be so good with everything else to be an impact guy at the major leagues when you're throwing 87, 88 miles an hour, even if you're left-handed.
And the
everything
thing
else
is,
has to be premium.
You know what,
especially the command.
And you know what gets thrown out is, hey, well, Tom Glavine did it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is yes.
Well, Tom Glavine did have 80 command.
But we said this before. That's true. But what happens is you take Tom Glavine, take Greg Maddux, take Jamie Moyer, and it's like, okay, there's these three who've done it. But there's for every one of those, there's 100 guys who get
Bruce
compared
Chan.
To him who say, hey, this guy could do it, and it very rarely happens. Now, that's not saying eventually there will be another Tom Glavine.
Right, and there might be a subset. I call it the Jeff Suppan subset of guys who are – back of the rotation stuff and are durable and throw enough strikes to get by and to be survivors and to be innings eaters.
And not even innings eaters, but if everything falls right, you know, I mean, if everything falls right, you pitch in the National League right now.
Right.
Like, Jason Marquis has been an innings eater, you know, better fastball than what these other guys are talking about, but Jason Marquis has been an innings eater for years. You look at it this year and all of a sudden, you know, he's been more than that.
Right.
At the same time,
Speaking
of Jeff Suppan, he's a guy who I could see if the Rockies, you know, which I don't think they're going to have any reason really at this point.
They're the wild card team.
So they're not going to trade him. But if they were not in that, and it's like, hey, and they ended up trading Marquis to an American League club, he's one of those guys you could just see kind of going to the American League club, and it's like, wait a second, this is, you know, a whole different level.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, and Marquis, like you said, I think he does have a little bit more fastball than most of these guys, but Suppan is, to me, the ultimate guy, the ultimate ERA plus of 95 for his career kind of guy, if you're going at Baseball Reference. I mean, this guy's always right at or just below average, and actually giving him too much credit. He is. He's a 99 guy for his career. He's right at
average. He's league average.
And he is a 180 to 200 inning guy every year. And there's
value. There's a lot of value in that. That's the thing is that we're not – denigrating. Like, if Travis Wood ends up having a Jeff Supon career,
that'd be great.
He's a top 100 prospect.
And most, and
I mean, that's the thing to make clear.
And that's what I was about to say. I think he is a top 100 prospect because I do think he'll be average, a major league average guy. And most of a player's value is in being average. At
the
major league level.
That's the thing is that we
but that's not what a top 25 is. We're trying to go impact.
We want to point out when we're doing a thing like a top 25, we're talking about impact, but at the same time, being a big league regular is a very big thing. If you can do that.
Being an average big leaguer is a great job by scouting
right.
and player development.
And if you can be a big league regular, right? I mean, just that. Like, even if you're a below average big leaguer, the reality of it is that, like, look at how many teams out there right now are in desperate need. Like, look at if the Royals had a below-average big league shortstop in their system.
Yeah, that'd be great.
They
would be falling over themselves. They'd be trading Daniel Cortez and somebody else.
Derek Saito.
Oh, I love Derek Saito. Well, not really, but Cal Poly represent.
But bringing it back to the top 25.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think a guy like – I think most of our guys in our top 25 are high-impact guys. And
no, there's not really – I mean, we are going to go for – in our top 25, there's no one in our top 25 who you do not – if you – for lack of a better term, if you dream on them, you know, you use a scout term. If you dream on them, they have a chance to be an impact big leaguer and above-average big leaguer. Now, we can tell you right now, not all of them will.
I would say the lowest ceiling guy in the top 25 for me is Jason Castro at 19. But to me, he has extra positional value. He's a catcher. He's a solid average to a tick above defender, and I believe in him because of the athletic ability and the savvy.
And
he's a left-handed hitter. I think he's going to be a 270 hitter with 10 to 15 home runs.
Honestly,
I think he's going to be better than Tony Sanchez, poor Ejemplo, who was just the fourth overall pick in the draft.
But to give you an example on that, he may be the lowest ceiling guy in our top 25. At the same time, you describe that. That's a guy who, as a catcher, if he has a good first 3 months, he's an all-star.
I agree.
No, one or two appearances in the game, but that's...
I don't think he's a guy you build a franchise around. I don't think he's a 3-4-5 top hitter. I don't think he's going to be an impact guy. I do think that Jason Catcher is going to be a starting big league catcher for 5 to 10 years. That's a lot of value.
Now let's
go
to the other side. And by the way, if you want to see our top 25, just go to baseballamerica.com, our prospects page. You know,
it's a subscriber-only link for the overall story.
But you can go to the blog post. There's also a blog post which give you the list if you're not a subscriber. Now, that being said, we have our number one prospect on here, but I think you'll agree with me. Our number one prospect is not the guy who, if everything falls right, would have the highest ceiling of anyone on this list.
I think I agree with you. I think that there are a couple guys who have a higher ceiling. Like if Jesus Montero could actually be... basically, it could be Mike Piazza. If he could be a below-average catcher, but decent enough back there that it doesn't kill you, and then he's going to hit the way we think he's going to hit, then he has a higher ceiling. I think Mike Stanton has a higher ceiling.
I think Mike Stanton could be the guy who we're talking about. Just like, wow. I mean,
still kicking myself for not ranking him higher in my personal top 50.
But Montero, the thing that jumps out to me, Montero got promoted to Double A. He's walking almost as much as he's striking out in Double A at. You know, as a 19-year-old catching.
He is a huge human being, though. I got to tell you, that's the thing that has stood out the most about seeing him in the last two Futures games. He's just big. I mean, he's just big-boned. A big kid.
Catching-wise, the best way I can explain it catching-wise is like you think back of it now, it's like Carlos Delgado was a catcher.
Yeah, exactly.
And the talk all the way through the minors was, well, with Carlos Delgado, man, if he could stay a catcher. At the same time, anyone you talk to would be like, no, he's not staying catcher. That's really probably a pretty good description of Jesus Montero, is that, he's catching. But at the same time, unless you just want to live with, less than you expect behind the plate, at some point there comes the question of why would you keep him back there? I'm not a guy who's a fan of moving guys off of it just because, we got a spot here at first base, so let's, ruin his long-term ability to play, catcher or third base to move him. That being said, the bat's going to be ready a long ways before the glove is,
yeah.
And we don't even know the glove ever will be.
I think the Yankees have clearly indicated they don't think the glove will be. They have Austin Romine. They drafted Kyle Higashioka. They drafted J.R. Murphy. They've signed a lot of catchers the last few years. They just signed the Sanchez kid internationally for $3 million. So we've gone a little long on the podcast already.
So we're gonna I want to go one other spot before we go to the...
Yeah, let's wrap this up.
Because we had an interesting discussion in the office about this. The guy who I think there was kind of a lot of debate about, number five, Madison Bumgarner. John is the worshipped at the altar of fastball command.
Yes.
You know, my concern, I have a little bit more concern with Bumgarner, because, not that I don't think he's going to be good, but because the concern I have is that are the secondary pitches, you know, are they 35-40s or are they 45-50s? Because if he's got even 50s.
Sounds like it depends on the day.
Yeah.
Honestly, it sounds like it depends on the day. And when he's good, his slider is a 45-50. I don't think his changeup, I think his changeup is more in that 30 to 40 range. I think his slider is fringe average and there are days where it's pretty good. It's never going to be a Steve Carlton plus two-plane slider because of the arm slot. It's just never going to be. But like you said, I mean, I think he can live and die by the fastball alone. I think he can dominate on the fastball pretty much alone. I think if you command your fastball, throw it with velocity, and throw it with life, all of which he does, everything else plays up, and all of a sudden that slider, that might be a 45, plays way above that. So that's where I come from on Bumgarner. And he is still succeeding quite well at Double A. The ERA is still under 2 in about 60 innings at Connecticut.
And, no, the success is, I mean, he's been the best pitcher in the minors for the last 2 years. I mean, there's just no...
Yeah,
you know,
there's no doubt.
There's no real question on that. I mean, he's been a notch above anyone else as far as consistent success. My concern is that, you know, we talk about profiles.
Where's the ceiling, yeah.
And my concern is like, we talked about this. It's like, okay, who can you think of out there who, at the big league level, as a starter, dominated, like was an elite level, you know, starter with, out a second pitch that you go, that's a major league average pitch. Like
it's hard to think of somebody, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, you can think of guys who had that profile who ended up being dominant, you know, closers, but it's hard to think of a guy, at least for me, that I can think of who you say, okay, well, he dominated off the fastball and really, you know, his second pitch he used, I mean, he was 80% fastballs, and he threw everything else just to show me.
Most of the guys you can think of who do that are guys like a Curt Schilling or a late-career Roger Clemens where the second pitch was a split.
Right. But
that's different.
If Bumgarner had a split, I wouldn't be talking entirely differently because
even
that split,
the split
is a second pitch.
I would say even then the split was generally, for those guys, an average to plus pitch. So I have faith that his slider will be an average pitch and give him a second average pitch. But I also have faith that I think it is a little bit different for a left-hander. I think you can. I mean, Cliff Lee threw his fastball 77% of the time last year and won the Cy Young Award with it. I think that Madison Bumgarner's fastball is better than Cliff Lee's fastball. That's the comparison I guess I should make. I think it's going to be a lot like Cliff Lee. Is he going to go 22-3? No, we all know that was luck.
Right.
But Cliff Lee has the last 2 years. The record's not near what it was last year, but he's been a very consistent above-average starter again this year. He's just on an awful team, so... last year he had a lot of luck and a lot of a lot of runs scored for him. This year it hasn't happened that way. But we have a couple. We do have different views on Bumgarner, that's for sure. And it'll be fun to see how that goes out for sure. We have a couple of emails into the podcast at baseballamerica.com email address. First, got to go of course with Joe Lacates, who always emails us. Joe says great job on the top 25. He was wondering how close Brett Lowry was to getting an honorable mention. Brett Lowry did not make, I don't think, our 26-50. I think he just missed. I think he's very close. I think a big question is really digging in with some of the scouts in the Midwest League and finding out how his defense is.
Right.
Is this guy going to be Dan Uggla? I think he's actually going to be a little bit better than Dan Uggla, a better defender. That's not saying much in some ways, but I think he has a chance to be an average second baseman. And boy, if he's that, he has all kinds of value as a middle infielder.
There's a lot of athleticism there. I mean, that's what we're, you know, I know people think of catcher and go, but this is a guy who's a pretty premium athlete.
Yeah.
And so I don't think long term there, you know, unless he doesn't work at it, there shouldn't be a whole lot of, you know, and we need to. That's going to be. Our midseason top 25, we bounce this off of multiple scouts. We talked to
4 or 5 guys myself.
And I talked to several other people did too. and you know, it also assembling what we've kind of been gathering through the year.
Right.
That being said,
there are a couple guys that we had more information than others. Yeah.
This is a snapshot where when you talk about our top 100, when we're doing our top 100 in the off season, everyone in that top 100 we have kind of bared down on as far as we, okay, here's the scouting report on defense. Here's the scouting report on,
yeah,
you know, all aspects of them. Right now at the midseason, we have less information than we will at the end of the season.
Correct.
Because we're getting ready to do best tools. We're getting
right.
ready to do league top 20s, you know, where we'll have more information on Brett Lowry. I would not be shocked, actually, at the end of the season, you know, going into next season, that you may find Brett Lowry higher than number 50 on that list, because the bat special and, you know, the defense, I mean, there's a lot of questions about it, but there are some decent chance that he actually could end up being a, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a more than a decent chance that he's going to stay at second base. Thoughts on Pedro Alvarez right now. And then August 18th, does Strasburg become number one? I think Strasburg would become my number one. As much as I love Jason Hayward and Mike Stanton, I think I would put Strasburg number one. As far as Pedro Alvarez, I have some significant questions. The strikeout rate's alarming. You know, the body's alarming. Will he stay at third base? That seems to be less likely. He almost seems like he's almost at the Brett Wallace category. Well, yeah, he might stay at third base, but it'll be short-term and he won't be good at it. And that was a big reason why I thought Pedro Alvarez was a better prospect coming into the 2008 draft than a guy like Justin Smoke. But now I've definitely flipped on that, and the main reason is not even the bat. It's the defensive value. I always thought that Alvarez had – and the thing is, I thought Alvarez was more of a field-to-hit guy than Smoke. He has not shown that in pro ball. So there's a couple of big question marks for me, and he has lost value in my estimation. I was not nearly as high on him as, say, like – I know Jim Callis had Alvarez, I think, 3 in his preseason top personal top 50 – I think I had Pedro 9 or 11 or somewhere in that range. So I clearly liked him a lot. I've definitely cooled on him, no doubt about it.
I think that's a, you know, he definitely, and when we talked to scouts, I mean, there were not just, you know, here in the office, but there were scouts who said, I mean, hey, you know, I do worry about the body. The body is, you know, is a little bit of a concern.
And that just all goes back in my mind to makeup. I mean, the holdout, how messy that situation got, how he kind of allowed it to get messy. I'm sorry. Ultimately, it all comes back to the player, especially when it goes to Vanderbilt, supposed to be a bright guy, goes to college. At some point, take charge of your situation, A. And B, you just can't, we can't hear stories about, well, he held out and then he had to go to wear the sweatsuit at instructional league. And he had to do the same thing in the spring, and then he had knee problems. Well, why do you think he had knee problems? Because he was big. I'm fat, and I got knee problems too, Pedro. So those are bad times.
But no one's paying you $6 million to be in shape.
That's correct. Boy, that would be nice. I think I'd get in shape if they paid me $6 million to get in shape. And then Andrew Thurman from right here in Durham, North Cackalack, asked that in the recent draft podcast that Jim and I did, we mentioned that Oakland and Grant Green have likely agreed to a bonus, but Major League Baseball won't approve it until closer to the August 17th deadline. Isn't that utterly ridiculous? College players can move through a system rapidly enough to give help to a big league club now or in the near future, especially someone as talented as, say, Dustin Ackley, but baseball refuses to allow these players to start their pro careers. I'm confused about the logic behind MLB's actions here. As with most things regarding the draft and bonuses. Are y'all just as confused, or can you shed some light on it? I'm just as confused. There is no logic.
No, it's absolutely illogical. I mean, because you're talking about even guys like Mike Minor, you know, Mike Leake, were guys who were basically thought of when they were drafted that they were essentially, you don't want to call them signability guys, but they were guys who were going to be quick, you know, guys who would quickly sign, get, you know, and hey, you're going to be signing slot, that area. Even with them, what we're finding is that no, MLB ordered, you know, 10% cut.
Right, right.
And it's like, no, we've agreed to this deal. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to approve that. That's over slot. You got to wait till, you know.
And the biggest approved slot so far, and here we are, like you said, like 3-4 weeks away from getting this all approved, the largest approved slot right now is $51,000 over slot, Rex Brothers.
But here's the laughable part of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. No player is no Steven Strasburg's not sitting there, and his contract negotiations are going to be changed by whether Mike Minor got slot instead of last year's slot instead of this year's slot.
Right.
The guys who are going to be the August 17th signings are going to be the August 17th signings anyway.
Correct.
There are the other guys.
And reducing the bonuses by 10% worked so well in 2007. Bonuses went up. Everyone waited to the last minute. And this year, it's pitiful. It doesn't make any. It's just so counterproductive, like you said, JJ. It just doesn't.
But and again, it's
no
just
point.
It's against the whole idea of what we're talking about. Like, okay, yeah, there's a big difference. Brett Wallace is in AAA in large part because of the outstanding
start
he had last year.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, he allowed him to. They were there to say, hey, this guy's going to start the season at AA. Compare that to Pedro Alvarez, who had to start the year in high class A because he'd never played pro ball.
Yeah, it's a big difference. I mean, it's a big difference. And Brett Wallace is talking about one of the reasons for increased strikeouts, he said, we talked about it in the Futures game during the rain delay, is that you never play this many games in college, and you get a little fatigued, and your bat gets a little slow, and that's what leads to a lot of these strikeouts. And he's just getting a second win right now. I think Pedro Alvarez, especially if you're not in shape, if you're not used to being that big, like Brett Wallace is used to being that big, he is big bone. But you know, I think that's a big part of the issue. So I just think that Pedro Alvarez is that's a huge issue, and I think he'd be in a lot better shape as both as a prospect and physically if he'd been able to sign quickly. And of course, last year his whole thing got just thrown into a complete tizzy when he signed illegally, basically, after the midnight deadline, which none of this is really Scott Boras' fault. I think Major League Baseball constantly gets outflanked. And like you said, it just doesn't help any. No player's going to get more money just because they signed for last year's bonus and it got approved in mid-July instead of mid-August. It really.
Because everyone knows, every agent out there knows, Mike Minor, when it's all said and done, is going to sign for last year's slot.
That's right.
And so it doesn't affect the agents. The agent who's sitting above or below is not going, oh, I'll take less money because I've heard that Miner's going to take this year's slot.
Yeah,
because everyone knows that's why he's holding out there.
Yeah, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I really wish that I understood what MLB's logic is, but I can't tell you we haven't covered it today, Andrew. And I do hope that the 2011 CBA, you hear all the talk, you hear all the rumors, where there's smoke, there's fire, all those kind of cliches. I really do think the draft and the international signings, I think there's going to be some kind of amateur signing bonus cap or structure put into the CBA in 2011. I think a lot of thoughts already going into that, JJ, and I think that we are going to see changes because teams are wasting more than enough money on these things as it is. Well, we went a little long on the podcast, and we didn't go over the whole panoply of things we thought we would, but we'll just come back next week and talk a little bit more about it. So remember to send those emails into us, podcast@baseballamerica.com. And you can, of course, follow everything that we do at Twitter at baseballamerica.com. I mean, at twitter.com/baseballamerica. For JJ Cooper, do you want to give your Twitter feed, JJ?
And I'm JJ Coop 36.
There you go. I don't have my own Twitter feed, but
also Ben Badler is
and Will Lingo, I believe. I did tweet though from the AAA All Star game twice, and then I realized I don't want to tweet from the AAA All Star game, so that was going a little too far. So until the next podcast, for JJ, I'm John. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.